Welcome to the Get Cyber Resilient podcast. I'm Gar O'Hara. Troy Heland, Security Engineering Lead over at Verizon Asia Pacific's Security Operations Center, joins us today to chat about their Mobile Security Index. Troy covers the trends they are seeing around mobile usage in organizations, e.g. the amount of work done on mobile, overusage causing distractions and bad decisions, and not just on dating apps, the right to disconnect laws being passed over in Europe, data leakage through unsanctioned apps, and how things like phishing attacks can be particularly tricky for humans to catch on mobile devices, and how zero trust applies to mobile devices. Over to the conversation. Welcome to the Get Cyber Resilient podcast. I'm Gar O'Hara. Today, I am joined by Troy Helans, the Security Engineering Lead at Verizon Asia Pacific Security Operations Center. How are you doing today, Troy?
Good, thanks, Gar. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks. I'm very happy to have you along. Looking forward to today's conversation. Where are you coming from to us from, as a matter of interest?
This morning, I'm in Canberra. I'm actually in the Verizon offices in the middle of Canberra.
Yeah, very cool. Nice. Troy, look, the first question we always ask is, how did you get to where you are today? And sort of good to get a sense of your journey to working with Verizon.
Yeah, perfect. It's the easiest question, right? So I went to uni at what was at the time University of Ballarat. It's now Federation Uni, I think, way back in 2001-ish, which feels like forever ago. After I graduated uni, I moved to Canberra for a different role, but not for long, before Verizon picked me up about 10 years ago. At the time, I was a Linux system administrator. I was very much on the tools and living the dream, really, I thought. All of my teammates and everyone I worked with was overseas somewhere. I was effectively the night watchman, in cricket terms, where right. Making sure things overnight didn't break. And then about 5 years ago, the big boss here in Canberra came to me and he said, we want you to join our local team as opposed to the global team and manage some people for me. I was like, well, I'm not really sure that that's in my purview, but you know what, I'll give it a shot. I'll try anything twice. So I moved to management about 5 years ago here in Canberra and haven't looked back since. So I now manage a team of, it varies at any given day about how many people we manage, but there's about 12 people, I think, at the moment. And we manage a NOC. We're also in the midst of a massive project where we're moving our environment to the cloud. So it's been a fun ride. And 10 years at Verizon says that, you know, I'm enjoying the place, so I'll be here for a while yet.
Yeah, it's excellent. It does seem to be a company that people stay there for a long time, which probably says volumes about it as a place to work. So good to hear. Today, look, we're actually here to talk about the Mobile Security Index report that you guys have put together for 2022. And, you know, for us to understand what that is, it'd be great to just get like what the purpose is, the methodology that you guys have used as a background.
Yeah, sure. So the findings from the Mobile Security Index are based on a survey of more than 600 professionals. I think it's about 632 that are responsible for security, strategy, policy, and management. They also do the buying, managing, and security of mobile and IoT devices for their companies. The report provides pretty unique insights into the current mobile threat landscape and what organizations are or, you know, what in most cases aren't doing to protect their data and their key systems. So I think that's what the MSI really is.
Excellent. Look, and I suspect, and this is obviously anecdotal, me just kind of guessing here, but I'm thinking that these days it's probably, you know, mobiles are the primary interface to the internet and, you know, that the applications for business will continue to kind of go up every single year over year. What are the big sort of trends that you're seeing in terms of mobile usage in organizations?
Yeah, it's a good question. And what we found was that close to half of the companies that we surveyed, I think it was 45%, said that they suffered a compromise involving a mobile device just in the last 12 months, which is, if I hadn't seen the MSI previously, I would have been mildly shocked about that, right? Companies with a global presence, we found also, were more likely to have been affected than, which is about more than 60-something percent had been hit, compared to 43% of organizations that only had a local presence. And you're right, the trend is rising. 14% year over year for the last 5 years that we've been producing this report, it's been going up.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's astonishing to me how easy everything has become to do on mobile. And I kind of think, you know, when I think about like expenses or
communication, like so much of the stuff that I used to rely completely on a laptop. It's easy. You know, everything is kind of optimized for mobile devices now. It's incredible. And sometimes it's actually, I don't know if it's been your experience, it's actually easier on a mobile device than it is on a laptop sometimes.
Absolutely. And we're all, I don't know if victim's the right word, we're all falling for it, right? And we're all just sitting on the couch and, you know, my laptop's over there or my desktop's over there. I got my phone here. I can work this out. We all fall for the trap, I think, of looking perhaps at our phones or our devices too much.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's always with us is the other thing. I think that's the thing, you know, I feel like it's wired my brain for laziness because I don't have to your point, I don't have to get off the chair. It's already there. It's an interesting one. It actually kind of leads to the next thing I'd be keen to talk about. And this is in the Mobile Security Index report. It actually goes into this idea of right to disconnect from work. And we've seen, you know, laws that have been passed in Ireland, in France, Italy, Spain. You know, the Europeans are very good at that, by the way. I'm from Ireland originally, and I can tell you, certainly our continental friends when it comes to the good barriers between work and you know, home life, they're pretty good at that stuff. But, you know, it's what we've just said there. We're tending to see this really big trend of BYOD very much as the norm these days. And that connection that sits in our hip pocket or, you know, in our sort of handbag or laptop bag or wherever it may be gives us that connection to work all the time. And it'd be good to understand if there's any kind of insights around this, how that plays out for employee burnout or things like over-engagement for employees.
Yeah, absolutely. Staff retention is one of the things that are being talked about the most in our industry, I think. And it ties in really closely with our new working from home practices. And I say new because over the last 3 years, we were really kicked in the butt to make sure that we could be able to work from home. And now our employees are demanding, quite rightly. And this right to disconnect is leading the way, I think. So with BYOD becoming the norm, it's really important for companies to set standards for their employees to be able to disconnect from work. It needs to be clear and available to all employees, and that's to prevent weariness creeping in, potentially stopping employees, worn out employees and tired employees that are working from their phones or whatever. It's harder to see the warning signs of phishing attempts that they might otherwise see, and that's just from a security point of view. It's not necessarily from a staff retention point of view at that point as well. So it's due to the longer hours that folks are working because they can, right? Like we've talked about, they're sitting on the couch, they're just on check these few emails or whatever. Outside of normal work hours, then people are more likely to perhaps click links that perhaps they shouldn't.
Yeah, definitely. It's such a weird one. I do find, I was talking to somebody at the Gartner conference. I'm just back from in Gartner Symposium. And we were having this conversation about the world of cybersecurity. And I'm guessing you would have a sense of this given the kind of role that you're working in. And he made a really interesting comment that we're wiring our brains for negativity. You know, our industry is all about finding the bad things and looking for the evil thing that's happening in an organization. And he was making the comment, which I thought was really insightful. I don't think I'd really thought about it before, is that I kind of only speak for myself, but I think it probably applies to a lot of people. We're not very good at then compartmentalizing that way of thinking just to work. And we actually then bring it out into, you know, into the barbecues of the weekend and, you know, when the car breaks down or is acting a bit funny. Totally off, you know, off sort of topic here and off piece a little bit. But like any thoughts on that? Because he said it to me and I was like, yeah, actually, that's probably true.
I suspect it absolutely is true. Yeah, I don't have any data or numbers to back that one up. That's a hard one to measure, right? It's absolutely. And this molding of our work and home life balance, where you can always be available at work now, whereas perhaps in 5 years ago, the majority of our industry perhaps weren't. It's really tricky, and it's something that I suspect. Without knowing for sure that the research is lagging on what effect that's going to have, not just today in the short term, but in 5 and 10 years' time.
Yeah, I think you're spot on as well with the timeframes, because I think so much of this stuff and so many of the changes that we're seeing in today's world, it's not immediate, right? It is, to your point, it's 5, 10 years from now that we'll actually start to see this stuff show up in, you know, maybe over anxiety problems in people in our industry. Yeah, interesting. I want, like, I'd love if we could sort of somehow bookmark this and come back to this, you know, when the data is there in 10 years, because I suspect we'll be one of the industries where you see a sort of higher incidence of anxiety and depression. And actually, that's showing up already. Actually, we had a guy from an organization called CyberMinds on the pod recently, Peter Koronius, and his whole organization is around that, you know, kind of helping with depression and burnout from security practitioners. So definitely think that's a big thing. You mentioned, as you were talking about that kind of barrier between work and life and our friends in Europe, you know, with their right to disconnect and that impact to cyber resilience. Can we dig into that a little bit deeper? And is that covered in the Mobile Security Index report? You know, what's the impact that overusage is actually having for cyber resilience for organizations?
Yeah, it sure is. In the report, we found out that almost four-fifths, or about 79% of respondents, agreed that recent changes to work practice had adversely affected their organization's cybersecurity. With the increased threat, it would seem that companies would double down on their policies. But the findings kind of point to the opposite of that, right? With 85% of our respondents saying that home Wi-Fi and cell networks and hotspots are allowed, or perhaps there's no policy at all against them, and 68% of respondents allow or have no policy against the use of public Wi-Fi. So I could be, you know, working for the, yeah, I know it's quite shocking to me that I could be working for some big companies at McDonald's using their Wi-Fi, and the concerns there should be, I thought, pretty obvious, but it's perhaps not as obvious as we thought.
You know what's funny? You know, that word obvious so often pops into my head when I'm looking at a policy or an organization that has an approach to security where you're thinking, like, surely in this day and age, we know better than that. And that's an incredibly high number, of people just jumping on sort of public Wi-Fi. Do you, like, it may not be in the data, but would it be public Wi-Fi but forced to use a VPN, or like, would you have any of those kind of insights?
The key, I think, to the data that we've got is that there's no policy around it in particular.
Okay.
So,
yep.
So while they're not actively saying you can go and sit at McDonald's and work on their Wi-Fi, it doesn't suggest that they don't have to either, or that they couldn't, or they could be sitting there on their phone while they're out at a cafe, or taking their laptop and having a coffee at the cafe, which is something that our employers would love to be able to do. But how you then access the work systems is where the difference, I think, lies between a company who might be ahead of the curve and some that aren't.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you. I mean, while it's not a sort of, in theory, a technical security control, like, that application of policies, or at least having policy in place, is so critical. It's amazing to me that we don't have, you know, just template policies that are the baseline if you're going to have a, you know, any kind of modern approach to digital organizations, or, you know, the digital transformation that's probably happened for many organizations, that you just don't go with, you know, a default, here's best practice security policy. Like, it's not hard to do, I would say, in this day and age. It's amazing to me that that's not in place.
Yeah, absolutely correct. Yeah, it's not difficult just to put the policies in place. It's a matter of enforcing those policies might be a little difficult sometimes, but
yep.
But to be training your employees should be pretty high up on the list, I would have thought.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a pretty good segue into this idea then. You know, as you say, the policy is a bit of paper, right? It doesn't actually do anything for security other than sort of direct people in terms of what they should be doing, or the company's approach to something. But, you know, the kind of rubber hits the road then when you're looking at implementing things that put people on rails in some way, shape, or form. So how do you see company-managed devices, like via MDM, competing then with employees using their own, you know, personal and I'm assuming often unmanaged devices? So that maybe is a two-part question. Like, how is that going in terms of MDM versus just completely versus BYOD? And then with the BYOD, are they actually, like, completely unmanaged?
Yeah, right. So look, as reliance on mobile devices in business grows, and it's growing, and we know it's growing, and it's growing enormously, so does the importance of that properly managed mobile device. And keeping mobile data protected and mobile device management enables administrators to manage, track, and control the mobile devices connected to their networks in theory. While MDM provides the extra level of security, we're still seeing employees use their personal unmanaged devices. There are some benefits to personal devices, and we get that, right? The employee finds it easier or whatever. Greater productivity, you know, from the comfort of your couch, like we were talking about before. and efficiency can go up in that regard. And cost savings, right? If I'm not buying a whole suite of laptops for everyone because they've already got their own, happy days. But there's obviously that downside. And over a fifth of IT leaders in an absolute study said that their primary reason for wanting their employees back to work in the office, which is not what our employees want in the first place, is to maintain better corporate security posture. And that's not the way we should be thinking, I don't think.
I totally agree with you. Like, it seems like the toothpaste is out of the tube at this stage. You know, the reality is that choice between security and then people quitting because they don't want to go back into an office, that just seems crazy to me. And with the move, and I think we'll get to this a little bit later, but it feels like the move is actually the opposite direction. You know, how do you enable people to be mobile and work from anywhere? And, you know, given the amount of information workers we have, it just seems bonkers that, you know, anyone in this day and age is saying you've got to come to a physical place to kind of do the work of sitting on a Zoom like we are today, or you know, jumping on conference calls.
Right, you're right, and we mentioned it earlier on about staff retention and how key that is, particularly in our day and age. And we, you know, there's the talk of the Great Resignation, or everyone's moving, right? So retaining staff is super, super important to maintaining your own security posture. Right, you've got to keep the right staff in the right places. So, if companies aren't thinking about it the right way, they're going to find themselves in a hole pretty quick.
Yeah, definitely. With the unmanaged devices, like, is there any kind of way to approach that? You know, you kind of, as you mentioned, you know, people can bring their own laptops, and that's certainly cheaper for a company. What are your thoughts on sort of how do you manage the security in those kind of environments? Do you push people to install sort of basic security agents on there that maybe the company can supply, or is it a bit of a Wild West?
we'd like to hope it's not a Wild West. I think it'd be best if we could. I don't think there's a one solution fits all, and wouldn't it be nice if there was? Wouldn't it be nice if every machine we ever got came in with it's going to be secure and everything's going to be working? There's lots of ways, and depending on the size of your organization or your company, you can outsource this to bigger mobs that do it really well, or if you're a smaller, perhaps a mum and dad shop that just needs to make sure that things are safe and secure, then there's absolutely ways. And it's probably not for me to talk about the sales aspects here, but we sure can offer certain solutions to companies, massive or small, to find their way around this.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that has come up, and I've actually had this conversation with folks on the pod in the past, around, I suppose, concerns when it comes to data leakage, and when folks are on unsanctioned apps, it tends to be. So even, you know, they're sitting on maybe a corporate device, but they got something like WhatsApp in place. And I don't know if you've seen something similar, but it certainly is something we're talking about in the industry, that worry of, you know, the side channel of WhatsApp or Signal, for sometimes often very sensitive company information, sometimes not, right? Sometimes it's just, you know, admin-y type stuff and a way to quickly communicate with people. But I remember I was on a panel, it's a little while ago, maybe a year and a half ago, and it was actually around healthcare. And there was some folks on there talking about how even in healthcare, they had situations where doctors were sharing patient information via WhatsApp. So things like x-rays of you know, and sort of health records. And what are your thoughts on that stuff? You know, the kind of those side channels, the shadow IT kind of world.
It's a massive issue. And it's one that we cannot and should not shy away from, especially in our industry, as leaders in our industry, right? We need to be on top of this. So firstly, there's the issue of employees sharing company information without realizing it, I think, to public apps. Nearly two-thirds of cyber attacks attributed to insiders were assessed just to be due to negligence rather than malicious intent. So it's not like people are going out of their way to, I'm going to share this so that someone else can get it. It's more of a, I didn't know, kind of response. And secondly, there's the issue of where that data is going, and if it will be used maliciously. So I think just last week, the Home Affairs Minister, Claire O'Neill, ordered her department to investigate the harvesting of data by, there's a small company you might have heard of called TikTok, right? Amid growing concerns that staff in China perhaps can access the personal information of Australians. So the issue of human error really plays the biggest role across the board in terms of data breach. And in fact, Verizon has a well-known annual data breach investigation report, our DBIR, which also notes the impact that human error has on data breaches, with 82% of breaches this year involving the human element. Whether that's the use of stolen credentials or phishing or misuse or a simple error, people continue to play a huge role in security breaches.
Yeah, and assume they always will, right? I mean, to your point, we're as long as tech has been around, people have been making mistakes of, you know, sort of varying levels of impact. I think one of the best ones I heard about, and it's many years ago now, it's probably like 4 or 5 years ago, but it was an Amazon employee who had sort of fat fingered something in one of the, I think it was an S3 config, but managed to basically cobble a bunch of third party platforms that were using AWS to the point where there was people thousands of kilometers away sitting in the dark because they had Wi-Fi light bulbs that weren't working because there was an issue in the DCs. And, you know, we're kind of like, but people can't see, obviously, it's an audio recording, but like it is quite funny when you hear those stories. But I mean, the other side of that is that it could be really serious. And, you know, if somebody just does the wrong thing, to your point, doesn't realize that they shouldn't be using WhatsApp to share company information or have TikTok installed. I mean, TikTok, it's a really interesting when you raise about TikTok because I absolutely agree with you. Like those third-party platforms that are just harvesting tons of information in the backgrounds, how cavalier people are with installing those things on their devices. There's one going around at the moment, and I've had a few people send videos. One friend sent videos of her kids singing songs, and obviously they've used a sort of AI approach to make it look pretty good, actually. It's very funny when you see it. So they, you know, have these kids singing hardcore German dance music, and I got one from Ireland of an uncle singing an old sort of, I think it was a Hot Chocolate song. Very funny, right? But I can guarantee you the permissions there, they're probably bonkers. You know, it's probably like, yeah, give us all your photos, give us your contact, you know, all your contacts and stuff. What do you reckon, like, how does that end? Do you see governments coming in and saying, like, hey, TikTok is, I mean, obviously that's a discussion in the US at the moment about potentially banning TikTok because of the potential for influence attacks on elections and stuff like that. But how do you see that play out? Probably here in Australia, maybe, is, you know, let's scope it down a little bit.
I wish I knew the answer to that, Gary. It's a really hard one, and it's not going to be popular for any government to come in and say to the entirety of Australia, don't use TikTok, it's not going to work here. I think we're going to be driven by, like you mentioned right at the top, by what Europe does in this space, I suspect. It seems to me, and this is more of a personal opinion than anything, that they have more open and free control over, you know, what you do on a personal level, but also tighter regulations on the companies that you're potentially getting involved with, whether it be on your phone or on your laptop, right? It's the reason why we have to click accept on all the cookies when we need to, or such, right? It's because Europe brought this thing in, which made a difference. I wish I knew that if there was a magic switch that we could flick to say, you know, every company's going to do the right thing forever, then great, let's flick that switch. But that is obviously not going to be, right?
Yeah, it's such a shame. I wish that button exists in some ways. It would be so much simpler. And you make a really good point there because I think it almost becomes an election issue. You know, that's the weird thing. It's not like whether it's good for us as a country. It's the Australian population, for the most part, wouldn't really understand that the risk that they're putting the country at and would probably, you know, push against any party that tried to sort of regulate or ban something like TikTok. So, yeah, it is. It's such a funny one. We're definitely not going to solve it in the next 10 minutes of this podcast. I wish we could. I'm sure our listenership would go through the roof if we could do that.
I'm not offering any solutions to that one. No.
Yeah, it's there be dragons. So, look, maybe something a bit simpler here then. And I'd love to get your thoughts on this one. So, there's clearly a difference in mobile versus computer-based attack. You know, there's a screen size issue. There's a bunch of things that I'm guessing will be going on. You know, when you think about a computer-based attack versus a mobile attack, like how do attackers think about that, and what are the key differences that you'd sort of see between those two?
Yeah, and that's a fair question. I think most people, everyone I know, certainly owns a mobile, right? And to be honest, and we kind of hinted at it earlier, they've almost become an extension of our hands now. We've always got them. Yep. So it's a lot easier to target individuals through their mobiles as compared to computers these days because they've always got them. We also know that many keep personal and professional work apps and data on their phone, like including financial information. So in reality, your mobile phone now is pretty much a honeypot, and that's a concern.
Yep. Yeah, huge amounts of data and access to things. It sort of always blows my mind how much we actually do on these devices and how much we store on a thing that could be stolen. And granted, I think the locking mechanisms have gotten better for the most part. You know, I think biometrics, it's not perfect, but it's pretty good compared to the old days of, you know, a four-digit PIN code that you could probably tell what the numbers were because of the grease marks on the screen or whatever. So you're like, you know,
right,
pretty good shot of knowing which four numbers, and then it was just a matter of kind of arranging them. It's definitely something we think about a lot, and I wonder what FIDO will do there as well. You know, when you get to the point where, and I think a lot of us are excited about the passwords going away, probably not the organizations who sell password managers, but yeah, it's definitely good for our industry, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
One of the things, and you know, we talk about it a fair bit in our organization, right? We spend a lot of time dealing with emails and things like malicious links and phishing attacks and that kind of stuff. But one of the things that often comes up with companies when we're talking to them is their concern about mobile devices. You know, when you think about the size of a screen, because people hold them in portrait mode, it tends to be that, you know, things like URLs are a little bit different or harder to spot, but good to get your perspective of that. Like, can you kind of maybe walk us through the challenges for users when it comes to spotting phishing emails or even SMSs on mobile devices?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we found was that of all phishing emails where employees clicked on the link, it was just under 20% of them came from a mobile device. Okay. So attackers, as we know, will take advantage of any opportunity they can to make their phishing attacks more successful. And the design of apps, like you pointed out, on mobile devices, they can perhaps unintentionally make phishing harder to detect, which helps attackers, you know, get through defenses. It's harder to spot on mobile devices because, you know, the screen, like you mentioned, is smaller and there's aspects of the user design that make it harder to evaluate the legitimacy of an email or a website. URLs can be truncated, hard to read. They can disappear on scrolling to make room for more content, and you can't hover over a link on a phone to see if it's, you know, if I'm actually going to auspost.com.au or if I'm going to something else, which seems to be the regular one I get these days is someone sending me a package by accident, right? and on top of all that, users are more likely to check their emails on their phone nowadays, and I can give you a quick scenario, right? In the past, perhaps 5 years ago, when you're checking your work emails, 9 out of 10 times you're sitting in the office at your laptop where you've got that opportunity to hover over the link and see if it works. Whereas nowadays, perhaps on a Saturday night, or, you know, you've had a couple of beers and you're in a taxi on the way home and you're checking emails on your phone, and you think, oh, this looks real, you're significantly more likely, and this is obviously very circumstantial, to click that link when you're in that taxi on the way home than perhaps you would have been at 2 o'clock in the afternoon in the office. Yeah. So it's absolutely a growing concern.
Is that one of those, like, yeah, this story is about a friend of mine? You know?
On a personal note, no, that absolutely had nothing to do with anyone I know.
we're kind of obviously joking about it, but that is so, so true. People reply to emails at really weird times of the day, and I know I'm guilty of it, and I kind of wish I wasn't, but, you know, if I can't sleep properly or something like that, I'll get bored and, you know, jump on the phone and, you know, try and read the news or something like that, something that, you know, these days isn't going to calm you down and help you go to sleep. But yeah, inevitably you go, I wonder what's going on in work, you know, and have a quick scroll through and, you know, go down that rabbit hole. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, interesting. Look, what are your recommendations for our listeners in terms of, like, how they can approach then that securing of mobile devices and their use, obviously, you know, whether it's kind of apps that they're using, and maybe specifically around BYOD?
Yeah. So look, while organizations are waiting for their employees to come back to the office to fix their cybersecurity posture, the reality is the vast majority of respondents to the MSI, about 85%, are saying that flexibility is important to where they work, which doesn't quite marry up, right? And what devices they can use will be important for organizations to be able to attract the best new talent. Again, staff retention is key. So new security approaches and tools mean that employees working from home, they can be just as secure as though those working from the office. It's about putting the right controls in place and manage a mix of that remote home, and there's a lot of hybrid and office-based employees that, you know, it doesn't need to be more difficult than it is. It's just a matter of making sure you get it right.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of those things that you've just mentioned there is the, I suppose, mandating which devices can be used. And, you know, that's probably something worth thinking about, right, is that you don't want an operating system that's so old it can't be patched. Or I actually bought a banana phone. I don't know if you remember those, the Nokia. They're real old school. They did a kind of retro release. It was about 3 years ago, and I got all nostalgic. I'm like, oh, man, like a 5G version of the banana phone. So I went out and bought one. But, yeah, it's sat in a drawer. I suspect I wouldn't be allowed to use it anyway for work. But that's actually a really important point, right? The you want a relatively modern device that's getting regular security updates, and that's going
to
be critical.
And we need to make that balance between giving our employees what they need and what they want, and but also what the company needs and what the company requires from a security perspective. While it might be nice for Joe down the road here to use his banana phone, you know, perhaps in the security's interest, it might be best if we just put that one in a frame on the wall and leave it up there because it looks nice.
Yeah, good times. And look, maybe the last question, we're pretty much running out of time here, but like zero trust, right? You can't have a cybersecurity conversation without mentioning zero trust these days. And sort of given the topic we're talking about, it does get covered in the Mobile Security Index report. Can you walk us through then its application when it comes to security and the security of mobile devices and remote workers?
Yeah, Zero Trust Network Access, ZTNA, it's an approach to network security that assumes every device, application or even system that connects to your network could potentially be compromised, right? So as companies embrace remote and hybrid work, a ZTNA model can help combat security threats while giving employees still that flexibility to work from anywhere and on any device they choose, perhaps not from McDonald's, whether it's their desktop, their tablet or their phone, with an approach focused on verification rather than implicit trust. Companies can establish a strong security perimeter. They can deliver a better employee experience, even if we don't let them use that banana phone, and remain agile, right, in this increasingly complex threat environment as we adapt to the future of work. I think 82% of respondents said that they'd adopted or were actively considering adopting a zero trust approach to security, which sounds right. And ideally that hits 100%, but that'll never be the case. But it's the way forward, and it has to be.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It seems to just map so beautifully to the way the world is working at the moment. And I don't know if Zero Trust just exploded because of COVID. I think we were going that direction anyway, right? It felt like that was the move, and the organizations that were kind of ahead of the curve didn't really suffer as much from that. The sort of transformation required when COVID did hit, many organizations were able to just, you know, literally pick their laptops up and go home. And it was kind of like the same deal, except connected to, you know, home Wi-Fi or McDonald's in some cases. And, you know, hopefully that was few and far between. But it definitely feels like despite our industry maybe overhyping it a little bit at the start, it's incredibly important as a sort of philosophy or an architecture going forward. It does really feel like that to me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's vital, and it's something that every company should look at.
Definitely. Well, Troy, thank you so much for joining us today. Really sort of stoked to get the time to talk to you around the Mobile Security Index. And we'll put a link to the report in the show notes for this episode. So if people want to go and kind of read in more depth, then they can definitely go and do that. So thanks so much, Troy.
Awesome. Thanks, Gar. Pleasure being my mate.
Thanks so much to Troy for joining us. And as always, thank you for listening to the Get Cyber Resilient podcast. Jump into our back catalogue of episodes and like, subscribe, and please do leave us a review. For now, stay safe, and I look forward to catching you on the next episode.